Welcome to the Market Moment. My name is Matt Walters, and I am here with Eli Freeman. Yep, usually you could do it like a yep. And John Martfeld.
Here,
present, accounted for. How are you guys?
Great.
Good?
Excellent.
Having a good week?
Life is good. Life is great. Sunshine out.
It's a good time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Love this. We're not in the spring, but it feels like spring right now.
It's felt
like spring for
feels like spring.
A while now.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And the market's been a blast.
And the market's been fun. It's
excited to talk about it.
Yeah, just keep buying.
Mm-hmm. You know
what they say. All right. So today, before we jump in, as always, we appreciate your likes and comments and subscribes. We've got a really good comment I want to bring up here at the end of today's show. So we really appreciate that. But give us a like, subscribe, leave your comment, share it on your social medias, as they say, and give us some help. We're having fun recording these and appreciate all the help we can get. So today we're talking about latest stock news with Reddit going public, the internet's outage over Wendy's, and the growing concern for inflation and the tech bubble. So jumping into the market, stocks fell on Monday at the rally. As the rally cooled off, investors are looking at the new inflation information coming out from CPI. I haven't looked this. Did it come up this morning yet, or is that later today?
I haven't seen it yet, and
okay.
I've had my
that's
stuff
that's supposed
on
to be coming out today, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Economists polled by Dow Jones anticipate CPI will rise 0.4% between January and February and 3.1% on an annualized basis. Excluding volatile food and energy prices, the so-called core basket is expected to increase 0.3% and 3.7% on the year. So any thoughts, Eli, what are you seeing?
Anything looks like it came out. It's positive report. I can't.
Oh, it says consumer prices rose 0.4%.
Yeah. It's like a little over 3%
in February and 3.2% from a year ago. So based on what they were predicting, month over month was exactly on target, and between and they were expecting 3.1% year over year, and it came at 3.2. So, nothing.
Not bad.
Yeah, I mean, kind of in line.
Not bad,
with the
although I go back to the Fed's promise to us that they needed it to get to 2%.
2%, yeah.
Or they weren't going to stop raising rates until it got to 2%, and they didn't care if we went to recession, so they've lied to us.
Yeah.
So that just goes on. Because they're not raising rates. That's the whole thing, right? We're going to lower rates, but yet inflation's not at 2%.
They're going to keep – Jamie Dimon came out yesterday and was like – his comment was he – recommends to the Fed or whatever that they don't, look at cutting rates
anytime soon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like keep this. And so I think there's a good chance they keep rates higher for longer, and the market is surprised by maybe how few cuts they end up doing this year.
Right.
I kind of hope that's the case because I think
probably
one of
right
the risks.
Case.
Yeah, yeah, one of the risks is that they try to get too aggressive coming back down. But anyways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts?
No, it's encouraging to see if we're having around 3%. If we dropped into the twos year over year in inflation, I think the market would just rip. Be thrilled to see that even if it didn't make it down to 2%, 2.8, 2.9, because we've slowly been coming down on inflation, and I think the Federal Reserve is excited to see it, but they definitely shouldn't. I agree with Jamie Dimon. They shouldn't be pushing for cutting rates anytime soon.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what's the rush?
Okay,
so meanwhile, on the other side of things, we've got Bitcoin, our favorite thing to talk about, hitting all-time highs at 72,000, up 70% this year, and the tech sector has been on a similar pace, not this year, but just, at all-time highs. Yeah. Magnificent Seven.
So let's talk about Bitcoin real quick. We have to.
Okay.
Bitcoin ETFs came out.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin has soared since Bitcoin ETFs have come out. But the bigger story is the money that has flown into these Bitcoin ETFs.
Right.
If you look at, I was looking at it a couple days ago, so I don't know if this is up to date as of today, but if you look at funds going into those Bitcoin ETFs, I think BlackRock has like $12 billion, Fidelity has like $7 billion, Cathie Wood, kind of like a secondary ETF provider behind those.
Yeah, there's like 11 total,
Bitcoin Cathie ETFs. Wood's fund has gotten quite a bit of money flowing into it. I think we're approaching something like $40 or $50 billion dollars going into these ETFs.
I mean, iShares Bitcoin Trust, so IBIT, has over $14 billion.
Yeah,
and this is just that's
one ETF.
Tiny bit of time.
Yeah,
and this is the thing I think about, which is kind of cool about. So I'm one of those people that have been. I don't understand Bitcoin.
Yeah,
and so if I can't go to McDonald's buy a Big Mac with Bitcoin, I don't really need it. Okay, and so. And so I get a lot of Big Macs. So here we go.
Will you buy Bitcoin if you can buy a McDonald's Big Mac with it?
Well, no, but here's the thing. but here's the thing with Bitcoin. It was like, it's like gold. Like, you can buy a gold bar, but what can you really do with a gold bar? Can you travel cross country with your gold bar? You still have to have cash, right? So Bitcoin to me is like that new frontier gold type of thing. And it's people have made millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars off Bitcoin. Great for them. And I just am late to the game or not in the game. However, the ETFs give people like me,
sure,
who wouldn't otherwise do Bitcoin, a chance to get Bitcoin.
There's so many people out there like us that are like, we don't want to understand at the level you need to be a good investor in it. Yeah. And I'm just speaking for myself, and I think like you. But the ETF is now that access that's like, you know what? I still don't understand it, but this simplifies it so much that if I put a responsible amount of money in it that I'm okay to be highly volatile and kind of use that. Like, that makes more sense now than having to go set up a Coinbase account and do it. Exactly. And I don't even get it, but like, you're like moving money around. It's like,
I'm currently wrestling with the idea of, should Bitcoin even be considered as like a small, kind of like what you're talking about, allocation in a Roth?
Yeah. I mean, like, I actually think the Bitcoin ETF is cool, and I'm all in on that. And it gives – this does not surprise me that these ETFs have gone to the moon.
Sure.
I've participated a little tiny bit. And, I mean, I think they're fantastic. It still does not escape the fact that I have no idea what's
that's
going
true.
On. But I agree. It gives us – guys like us a chance to dibble and dabble into something. And I think you're right. I think putting it into a Roth is kind of a neat idea because it's a – it's what is the difference between that and a – high-flying tech stock that we don't know it's what they're doing behind the scenes. You know, like kind of speculative.
I mean, how many times have people bought pre-profit, pre-profitable companies, but like pre-revenue companies?
Oh, right.
Right?
Right.
How many times? I mean, that's been done.
A million times.
And so I think that argument is, hey, if this is your high-flying part of your portfolio and you want to put a small allocation, you know, and now that you can do it so easily, it makes more sense for a lot of people.
Yeah, my 20 plus years
of high beta.
20 plus years of doing this, you're always trying to, like, I've found little stocks that I bought, and the stocks, I can give you probably 20 that have gone bankrupt, right? That I've tried to, I mean, I'm talking tiny money.
Right.
I'm not talking about stuff I'd put my clients in, but I'm talking like speculative stock. To me, the Bitcoin ETF is not as speculative as the speculative stocks. We know it's there. It is a market. People are using it.
They're buyers.
Reason they're buyers. So I think it's kind of cool. Now I'm in Bitcoin world. Cool. Now I'm in. So, thank you for the ETFs.
Yeah.
Quote that clip.
Snapshot.
Yeah.
All right. So the Magnificent Seven, so Google, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, you know the names, have all been driving forces in the S&P 500 and the major indexes. The benchmark index has scaled to all-time highs in 2024, but the performance of these mega cap stocks have diverged more recently. The most recent example is Nvidia's has still done well, and Apple struggled, right? I don't know what Apple's off. I looked at it, I think, the other day, and they were like 17% off their high.
Yeah.
So they've come down a little bit, had a little bit of a pullback. Yep. So any thoughts on that? Is that good, bad? What is nothing to look at?
Well, on Apple, I will say this about Apple. I've been watching Apple since it came out. I'm infatuated with Apple. Yeah, exactly. So I always like Apple. One thing about Apple is the cash on hand, the powerful nature of that company to do more and more things. Yes, they mention in here that the iPhone sales are less. They've always had this struggle in China, in and out, you know. And I think those things were always there for Apple. But as long as they have cash and they have the brains that I believe they have there to come up with new things, but also on the AI market, the AI, you know, the new AI field that is taking over all the news. Apple's participating in that. They're going to be part of that. So I think NVIDIA moving up makes sense, spreading its wings and going because it's the high flyer right now. But I think maybe Apple's 17% pullback may be an opportunity.
Sure.
Right? Because I think Apple's going to continue to be in our lives for a long time and a strong, strong company. So I don't look at that as a negative that it's pulled back. It might be an opportunity to get more, you know, if you own Apple already.
So year to date, the seven companies, NVIDIA up 73%, Meta up 36%, Amazon 13%, Microsoft 7%. Then we have three, Tesla, Apple, and Google. Tesla's down 28%, Apple's down 10%, Google's down 1.4%. But I think the cooler story of what's going on right now is not that Apple and Tesla and Google have a small sell-off. The cooler story is we're starting to see the market broaden out in a pretty dramatic way. Mm-hmm. You look at really anything other than the Russell 2000 basket of stocks or the speculative kind of high growth beta technology stocks, and the market is broadening out. Sorry, I kicked you out.
Yeah, no, it is for sure. And I look at that as like that's a healthier sign of, you know, thing when everything's going straight up, right? You just it makes me feel uneasy mm-hmm. versus when there's some like normal natural volatility.
Especially when what's going straight up is it's semiconductors, which typically flow with the market. Mm-hmm. If recession is coming, semiconductors are not a defensive position.
Yeah.
Like semiconductor sales will go down if a recession comes.
Yeah. So yeah, when you look at all, and we've talked about this a lot, so we won't chase on this, but you know, the equal weight and all of that, like the market, the same story that was true last year in terms of, hey, the Mag 7 are leading the markets and that's they're the only companies that are doing anything.
Right.
It's not true.
No.
Today. No, it's not.
Today.
Today.
Yeah. Which is good. We've been waiting for that, wanting to see that. So that's really good. All right. So Reddit, let's jump into this. So Reddit raised back in 2021, raised $10 billion. Now they're going public, looking at a valuation of around $6.5 billion, $6.4 billion. Looking to sell 22 million shares, priced between $31 and $34 each, raising about $748 million. A lot of notes here. So Reddit has influenced not just the internet culture, but offline culture too, with a recent example being in 21 with the meme stock saga, where subreddit Wall Street Bets, as everyone probably has heard that name over the last few years, shook up the market with their GameStop, craze that went just parabolic. The lengthy saga has been turned into a Hollywood movie released this year called Dumb Money, starring Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
So any thoughts on Reddit? I've never been a user of Reddit. I've never really been on there. I got on to just try to figure out what's Wall Street Bets, like a couple years ago when that was going on. But that's like the extent of my understanding of Reddit. So
I mean, it provides a way for people to have a voice, and that's ultimately a good thing for people to have a way to share their views and values and opinions, but it also can lead people who aren't as educated or maybe equally educated to have too much voice in a way that's not good. So there's good and bads to both of it. I think with them trying to do funding, all they're going to say is that's more advertisements coming onto Reddit.
That's why I don't understand the business. How do they?
Well, Reddit relies on volunteers from its user base to moderate the content, but the volunteers can leave at any point. I think you hear stuff like that. I mean, they're
volunteers are going to want money at some point.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They're not going to always be volunteers.
Right, and I think this to me would be a speculative IPO that I wouldn't, I wouldn't participate in. But I'm old. Yeah. Like if I was Eli, I might buy this. As a speculation. But I'm saying like if I can't see it and I can't see where the revenues are coming from, mm-hmm. It's not interesting to
this
me.
One's
it is a big name, and
when they raised it $10 billion last year or two, three years ago, you know, now they're just trying to hoping to get $6.5 billion.
Yeah.
So somebody's taking a haircut.
My guess it'll come out. It might soar, and then it's going to be based on profits, revenue. You know, how can they prove that?
Once we start to get more visibility to like what are those numbers and what do they look like?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I might jump into it now, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
So everybody's talking about Wendy's dynamic pricing. The internet is calling for a boycott on Wendy's after news dropped. It's like another Wall Street Bets thing. It's like, let's boycott Wendy's.
I just like how the internet has become a noun. A person is calling the internet.
Yeah,
the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
They're implementing a dynamic pricing model to their menu. So bear with me. So Wendy's is announced at the end of February that they're going to experiment with adjusting prices at peak times of the day. The testing will begin in 25 as part of a $20 million investment, blah, blah, blah. We expect our digital menu boards will drive immediate benefits to order accuracy, improve new experience and sales growth from upselling and consistent merchandising execution.
That's cool.
So, yeah, what are your thoughts on dynamic pricing in the food industry?
I mean, I could see that in the fast food world. I could see that growing rapidly to make it easier for wait times, to make it more affordable in the times to push people towards like happy hour style things like Sonic. Sonic has kind of done dynamic pricing just through their happy hour. And so, I mean, I I think it's kind of genius.
Like, yeah, but I think that the difference here is the prices are going to go the other direction.
Sure.
Right?
Pack and so it's happy like, hour for Wendy's.
Yeah, it's not so, for the consumer. It's so, you know, Sonic and those places use happy hour to bring customers in by dropping prices. This is going to be, hey, the demand is up, so we're going to look at can we, you know, can prices go
right,
up?
Right.
And I wonder how much of this, and this is honest curiosity, I don't know the answer, but, you know, in like a nicer restaurant that has like a lunch menu and a dinner menu, how much of this has been going on for decades?
Oh, it has. Right, it has been
like going on. Get a side of mashed potatoes at lunch. You know, it's $3.50, exactly. But at dinner it's $5.
Oh no, that's been going on forever. Yeah,
yeah, and you know that that has been. This is in your face, and they're talking about it, and so there's a
different dynamic. I wonder if there's anyone from Uber that Wendy's has taken over to work with them, because that's all Uber has done.
Yeah.
Is if you go to a concert and you try and get a ride after the concert, right when the concert ends, rides will be $100, $200, $300 instead of like. 10 or 15.
Right, right.
So I wonder if they've taken some engineers over.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to start going to Wendy's more often because anytime the internet tells me to boycott something, I go the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So I'll be going and paying that higher prices. I'll let you know
this whole,
if the burgers taste better in these higher priced times.
Now, this is Wendy's has every right to make a business decision and see.
Yeah.
And it's either going to work really well or it won't, right? And that's a decision they have. This whole boycotting stuff drives me
it's
nuts.
It's so silly.
It's
so silly.
It's like trying to prove a point. It's like, no, just don't go to Wendy's.
Burger King did a great opportunity. They took this opportunity. They said the only thing surging at BK is the flames. We don't believe in charging people more for when they're hungry.
It's funny.
So I think that's kind of cool. So this is what's good about capitalist society, right?
Yeah.
So Wendy's can come out and say they're going to do this. And then another firm can come out and say, you know, they can kind of combat that. And the little battle goes on, right?
Sure.
And that's what
great.
It's about. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so when Burger King's lines, when there's 20 deep on the drive-thru and Wendy's only is 3 deep, which way are you going to go? You have to decide if time is more valuable. So both companies are going to win in this little fight. But if you're a Burger King, Wendy's, McDonald's eater, you're just going to go get that regardless, and most of the time you're not going to worry about – I mean, I don't know that this is going to be that big deal. I think Wendy's is brilliant for doing this.
Well, what I was
this
saying
is my opinion.
Just don't go to Wendy's.
Boycott.
No, I mean, just I'm personally make that decision. Why do we have to get online and then try to rally the troops?
Oh, it's
and
so
say,
silly.
No one go to Wendy's. And like, okay, make that decision yourself, but like, why are you trying to get the entire country behind you?
It is silliness. Yeah. That's the new age, I think.
It's the new age.
It just sounds like boycotting to me.
Maybe it's a personal boycott versus a public boycott.
Anyway.
Well, we'll see. We'll look at Wendy's stock price.
Thousands of individuals all don't go to Wendy's individually, but don't post about it. It's not a boycott.
Moving on. So, anyways, we'll see how Wendy's does and if it's a good or bad business decision.
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting to kind of keep track of. So, circling back to last week, we had a great comment. We appreciate comments. You always hear me on here begging for comments, and we get a lot of good comments. But this one was good. I'm not going to read it word for word. So that's kind of my disclosure. It's not a direct quote because it's kind of long. But we appreciate it and wanted to kind of give a shout out. So the comment is, longtime listener, first time commenter, have learned a lot from you guys regarding the value of saving for retirement early. I can't agree more. The part I really liked was when he or she went on to give an example of, we talked a week or two ago about buying homes and how it's different, and it was different 5 years ago than today, and there are just certain cycles and things that are out of our control, right?
Yep.
It can be frustrating, but it kind of is what it is, and I don't mean that in like a disrespectful or harsh way. This commentator went on to say, you know, regarding when it's the right time to buy a house, listen to that episode after cleaning out some old paperwork. I'd forgotten that I bought my first house with a 6.35% adjustable rate mortgage. It was a 25-year-old 3-bed, 2-bath, which is over 1,600 square feet. We put sweat equity into it, remodeled the kitchen, and made some other improvements. Sold it after 5 years and bought a larger new construction home. My point is that I started small and was able to move up, took sacrifices, working a second job, driving cars until they were paid off, and then some. I think part of the home ownership problem now is the lack of small, older, quote-unquote, starter homes in our area, coupled with the buyer's expectation that they'll have an HGTV-worthy home for their first purchase.
I had
to accept that less than I expected at first and stretch the budget to make it fit, but it paid off. And I think that was a great comment and kind of somewhat, probably much better said by the commentator than what we had said a couple weeks ago. But what we were saying is, you know, it's hard. It's harder now than it was. I think he or she is spot on by saying, you know, in some markets in particular, the more of the issue is just not having that inventory of smaller, mm-hmm. older homes that mm-hmm. people yeah. can buy and fix up, yeah. right? And, you know, the home flipping business mm-hmm. has been hot for the last decade. That yep. may be a part mm-hmm. of it, right? Yep. You have those investors coming in to flip homes. And but anyways, we appreciate the comment. Do y'all have any thoughts or parting?
No, I love the comment. I do think it's cyclical, as we talked about before, right? It's harder to buy homes at certain points because of certain economic conditions, and we're back in one of those yeah. economic conditions. Mm-hmm. Interest rates high, inventory low, prices maintaining high. It's just a weird housing market, which is going to keep keep the middle class and under a little bit tougher to get the home. And the sweat equity part of that, yes, that is back in play. It was mm-hmm. easy money for the last 15 years with 0% on mortgages.
2% mortgage?
2%, 3%.
Allowed you to borrow the sweat equity instead, if that yes. makes sense. Like yes. you could borrow the money instead of having to put in the mm-hmm. sweat equity, where now you can't.
I did a retirement analyzer for a client the other day, which is what we'd use at Mach 1, which is a fantastic tool. But you put in the interest rate for a client. Every time I ask a client, do you still owe money on your house? You have a mortgage. And they tell you yes, and you find out the interest rate. And anytime I hear 3 point something or 2 point something, I just smile ear to ear like they hit the jackpot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that just probably won't happen again, or mm-hmm. at least it would take a long time. And that we got spoiled in this country with that time sure. frame, right? And so now it's like controversial when you say it's harder to buy a house, but that's yeah. okay. It'll flip. It'll come back, and it'll yeah. be there. And to this yeah. point, this person's exactly correct on that point.
Yeah.
So now it's more sweat equity, which are we ready for that if you want to get in the house?
Anyway.
Yeah. Anything to add? Nothing?
Well, we really enjoy the comments. Thank you for the comments. For next week, do you guys have any questions for the commenters?
I'm afraid to ask.
I would like to know what our commenters think about, you know, the news and media. If you watch it, we have to watch it, but you're hearing all kinds of different messaging. Are we going to have a recession or not, right? And now mm-hmm. it's starting to go away from the recession. Everybody's starting to believe that we're not going to have a recession. I am curious because a lot of my clients, a lot of people I talk to, are still very nervous about things, and they complain about prices of things and so on.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, all this data that we get, is it relating to our clients? Are they still feeling an inflation, quote unquote,
push? So you want to do like a poll in the comments?
Yeah, I'd love to yeah. know.
How do you feel about prices, inflation, recession? Do you still think we're going to see yeah. a recession?
Are you nervous, or are you getting over
it? In the near term? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your general vibes on the market, the economy?
Let yeah. us know.
Yeah. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll see you next week.
The hosts of this show are employees of Mach 1 Financial Group. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and nothing said in the show should be taken as investment advice. Mach 1 Financial Group, LLC, is an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Rogers, Arkansas. Mach 1 may only transact business in those states in which it maintains a notice filing or qualifies for an exemption or exclusion from registration requirements. SEC registration does not constitute an endorsement of the firm by the commission, nor does it indicate that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. The information presented is the sole opinion of the speaker and is not meant to be investment advice. Mach 1 does not provide tax or legal advice. You should speak to your tax or legal advisor regarding your specific situation. For full disclosures, click on the link in the episode description below.